Tennessee looks to bounce back against Florida this weekend. The Big 12 Conference is up for grabs as Colorado takes on Kansas State, and we break down the best and worst from a crazy Week 5 in the NFL. Check out Amore and Crane & Company. Hey, to all our listeners out there, appreciate you guys, number one. Number two, regardless of how you're listening to us, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave a five-star review, keep subscribing to the show, and please keep sharing it. Winning is the best cure for pretty much everything college football related, but there are moments where winning specific games can ultimately hinder a program in the long term. Now, I hate saying that. Nobody loves to win more than me, but sometimes to get to the light, you must walk all the way through the darkness. And it kind of feels that way for Florida as they go on the road to take on a Tennessee team that may not be what some of us thought they could be, or at least what we saw in the beginning of the year. But even with the loss to Arkansas, however, the Volunteers are still a big favorite to win this game, and by all accounts should. But what happens if Florida finds a way to pull out a dub in Neyland this Saturday? Could that be a scenario in which Napier begins to truly hold on to his job? All of a sudden, you are 4-2 with a chance to get to 5-2 with a win over Kentucky at home the following week. Now, most Florida fans I talk to, they're ready for a change. Their minds are made up. But it seems like those in charge are still holding out a little bit of hope, and all they need is a glimmer, one shining moment to keep Billy Napier around for another season. After all, DJ Lagway would still be there, and he's the future. The schedule would still be brutal. You don't want a guy coming into year one with that schedule. And there is technically more time on the Napier lease to Florida. So would Gator fans sacrifice a win in this game to ensure that Napier is replaced? I think some would, and in my opinion, most should. We all want our team to win. Nobody's disputing that. But sometimes ripping the Band-Aid off is the right option. I don't think beating Tennessee is going to turn Napier into a championship coach overnight. And the same problems that we've seen get him in this mess will most likely still be there. Is one weekend of short-term gratification worth a couple more years of intense pain? I don't think so. But what say you? Because it is about you, the viewer. Is it worth a loss this weekend to get Billy Napier out of town? David Cohn, former Michigan quarterback, my brother, former Western State, Colorado wide receiver. And David, I hate bringing up when winning is losing, but for the long-term health of Florida, is it better if Billy just drops this one and that chopping block, that guillotine, just it becomes a true fact of the matter?
Man, I'll let Florida fans call in today and say their piece, but I know on Saturday what they're going to be pulling for. You're going to be pulling to beat Tennessee. I don't care what they may say in the days leading up to it, but you want to beat this team. You want to beat a in-conference rival when game day comes. There's a lot of similarities for Tennessee with that game last week, playing Arkansas with Sam Pittman kind of with his back against the wall fighting for his job. There's even more similarities in this game to Ole Miss playing South Carolina. Ole Miss coming off that loss to Kentucky, were they fraudulent or was that just sort of an anomaly? They go on the road and play South Carolina. Now we know they handled business and they looked really good. I think there's a lot of similarities here. Tennessee coming off this loss to Arkansas, not just loss like a close game, really had no answer, right? On offense, especially for much of that game. Now you're going to play a Florida team that's won three of their last four. You know, say what you will about the direction of the program this year. They've won three of their last four. This is an old school rivalry. This is not going to qualify for any trap game even before Tennessee had this loss. So now my question is, I'm looking at this. Okay, if you're Florida and you want to win this game against a team that I still think has better personnel than they do, you either turn it into a low scoring battle the way that Arkansas did against Tennessee and the way that Kentucky did against Ole Miss, or you figure out a way to win some sort of shootout and it's 38-35. This dual quarterback system for Florida has seemingly been able to work. They've been able to work and win football games with it. I question whether or not either of those approaches right now can work for Florida against Tennessee on the road. I like Tennessee right now to win the football game, but I'm looking at 15.5 points right now, just asking why is the spread
there? It is a lot. And Blaine, I think there's a couple paths here for Florida, and we got to dive into what's happened with Tennessee offensively. I know we talked about it a little bit in the past couple of days. But I don't know if maybe as a Florida fan, it's watching it and hoping you lose. But maybe it's watching the game, and you know what? If it's going great, great. Nobody's going to be upset about a win against Tennessee on the road. But if you lose it, maybe it doesn't sting as much because you know it's a means to an end, and this probably had to happen for Florida to get into a position where maybe they can get back to the position they feel like they deserve they need to be in with a new coach.
Well, I think even if Billy Napier wins this football game, he still won't be the head coach of Florida walking into
And that's
year.
A very – that can be very true.
Yeah, I think two things can be true at once. You look at the later half of Florida's schedule, God, it's daunting. You're at Georgia at home, you go to Texas, LSU at home, and then you go to Ole Miss, and obviously you finish the season with Florida State. And the more I look about this game, I agree with David, 14.5, which I think it is at now. It's already getting bet down from 15.5, is too many points. And I don't think you have to do anything special to beat this Tennessee football team. I mean, what good program has Nico showed you that he can ball against? Nothing I've seen. He's had two against big teams. That's Arkansas and the week before against Oklahoma. Hasn't thrown for 200 yards. And we sit here and talk about Nico's feet and his legs from a rushing standpoint. He hasn't done anything either to impress me. Now, we'll go back to the Florida side. And Billy Napier, I think you need to make a decision at quarterback. I don't like the two-prong approach, especially in this game. Graham Mertz is the guy, right? That who's the guy is. I know he didn't look phenomenal last week, but if you're going to bring DJ Lagway in, that's for the dual threat. Graham Mertz and DJ had the same amount of rushing attempts and same amount of rushing yards. So I think this game, I think Billy Napier's fate is sealed. Billy Napier will not be the head coach next year. I think this game's bigger for Josh Heupel than it is for Billy Napier.
Well, and yeah, I mean, if we're talking about coaches that'll still be there, I agree with you. Here's where I'm at with Tennessee, and I'm going to get to the two-quarterback system that you're talking about in a moment because there's a couple things that are going on with that I think we have to put the context around to see why they're doing it. First off, with Tennessee, something that we talked about the last couple days, it feels like to me it's one of two things. One is that Nico is stuck in the same spot that Jalen Milroe was early last year in saying that, you know what, I'm going to prove to everybody that I'm a pocket passer. I don't need to run around and do all this. I need to show everybody I'm an NFL quarterback that can sit from the pocket, throw the ball away when I need to throw it away, not really have to create, but stay on time and stay on rhythm. So it's either that or he is legitimately worried, talking about Nico, of making a big mistake that's going to cost them the game. Because I went back and I watched. Because we talked Sunday about Tennessee not pushing the ball down the field. You know, Tennessee's offense should be fun. One of the scariest parts about Tennessee's offense is their ability to rip chunk plays down the field and how they can actually work backwards from the vertical third back to the line of scrimmage. And, oh, they got a good run game as well to go along with the quick screen game and the way they manipulate their splits at wide receiver. But it's like they've taken the fun out of it. They only operate within a 15-yard window, but I go back and I watch these route combinations, and there are guys that are working down the field. They're not always wide open, but Nico is looking them off almost every time. It's almost like he's stuck in a trance of, well, I guess we are a defensive team, and I am a young quarterback, so I might as well not turn the ball over and blow the game. You can't operate like that, and now Tennessee's offense is boring. Not only is it slower, because they're realizing, hey, we're not moving the ball at the rate we need to. And even though we have more depth on defense, we've got to make sure our defense doesn't take too many snaps. It's become boring. It's like there's either there's training wheels or a governor on Nico, or Nico's putting the training wheels on or the governor himself. And the more I watch the film, I think it's Nico because he's not creating with his legs, David. Yeah. He's not trying. He doesn't seem like he has the confidence to go out there and create the big play and realize, look, it's not going to work out beautifully from the pocket every time. I have all these gifts that God's given me. So to me, the verdict right now is that Nico's kind of afraid to push the ball down the field. And I think Josh Heupel might sense that. And I think Josh Heupel is a little bit rocky, not, you know, pun intended, to say, you know what, Nico, here, we're just going to call plays where you have to work the ball down the field or whatever. It's just there's a disconnect there, David, and it's taken the fun and really the motive and what makes Tennessee the most dangerous out of their offense, which, regardless of how good your defense is going to keep the other team in the game. And it cost them because Arkansas was able to hang around, and then stab you at the end.
Man, it's crazy to think Tennessee beat NC State 51-10, and we're sitting here thinking, well, actually, we may be a defensive team, and we need to play different on offense.
Like, to me, that's more worries.
What a couple weeks difference will make. You know, I'll never blame a quarterback for the play calling, right? Like, he can't control that. That's on the coaches. So whether or not there's more quarterback design run, I'll say the same thing like we said for Jalen Milroe last year. That needs to be called from the sideline. Now, whether or not Josh Heupel doesn't have the confidence in his ability to push the ball down the field field and that's affecting play calling. That may be true, even though this style of offense is so much different. If you're going to go warp speed like this and keep things simpler, then the offense is by definition going to look different than what Alabama has run, even though there's two different coordinators and all that. But he clearly was better when Tennessee made a concerted effort in the second half of that Arkansas game to get the ball out of his hands quicker and to attack the boundary on some of those shorter throws. Now, why they're not running him more, I don't understand that. I think that they need to do that. One thing I wanted to ask you, Blaine, when you were talking about Florida's schedule for the rest of the year, if Florida were to win this game and the end of that schedule isn't quite as daunting now that we know a little more about Florida State and their trajectory. Florida's at 3 wins. If they win this one, they beat Tennessee, who I still think is going to be pretty good this year, even with a loss to Florida, and they beat Florida State, that'd give you 5. Can you read off a couple more of those teams in the middle that could get them to
bowl eligibility? Yeah, so we'll just go through the whole schedule. Obviously, you have Tennessee on the road this weekend. You have Kentucky at home. Next weekend, you have Georgia at home. You go to Texas. You have LSU at home. You have Ole Miss at home, and you in the year at FSU.
So, Jake, if they were to steal another one of those, this is a lot of ifs. I understand that, and we still got to play this game out. But if they get to 6-6, it still doesn't seem like enough to me for Billy Napier's third year to keep him there. But we've been talking about how tough this schedule was all year. If they go 6-6, find themselves in a bowl game that they could then win for a winning record, what happens then?
That's why I opened with what I opened with, because I see a path to 6-6. And Scott Strickland, them saying, well, you know, you look at DJ Lagway, you look at some of the young guys on the roster, then you look at that schedule. Next year's just as brutal. It's just basically flipped. So you'd be bringing in a brand new guy. And again, the longer this goes on, the less the buyout would be for Billy Napier. I think 6-6, there's a decent chance he may stay. And you just beat UCF. So now that loss against Miami, while you do want to beat Miami and you want to hold home turf, you beat UCF, and then you beat Florida State, who's doing worse than you, by the way. At the end of the season, I see a path where they keep them at 6-6. That's why I opened with what I opened, because it hinges on this game, right? To me, I mean, I don't think you got Georgia at home. I don't think you're winning that one. LSU, maybe we'll see, but there's a survivable path there. So that's why I wanted to open with it, because I can see that a little bit. And I want to know what Florida fans think, because I think most of them with 6-6, like you mentioned, are probably going to want Billy out. But going back to this game, if you are Tennessee, right, and you realize, hey, the defense is still playing really well. Say what you want about the Arkansas game. They shut them out at halftime. And defense wasn't the reason they lost that game. But if you're Florida and you're looking at this and realizing, well, you know, Tennessee isn't generating a lot of big plays. Maybe they're going to try and generate those plays and give Nico some confidence down the field against us. I think that changes the way you kind of prepare a little bit for Tennessee, and you may have a little more of the puzzle figured out than what you would have if everything was going smoothly and swimmingly for Tennessee, because you're having to defend less elements with Nico right now than you really should overall. And if I was a Tennessee fan, I would rather me be critiquing Nico because you're making young person mistakes by trying to make the big play as opposed to not making the big play. But at what point, if you're Tennessee, Blaine, if let's say this game isn't going good early and Florida punches first, are you still looking inept on offense? At what point does it start to creep into your head? Maybe we aren't who we thought we were on offense, and Florida is able to hang around in this game and hang around in this game. Now, knowing the way the season's gone, Tennessee will win by 50, right? But I could see a scenario in which that confidence kind of starts to really leak out of this Tennessee offense.
Well, I mean, if it hasn't leaked out already, we can't sit here and act like Arkansas is a phenomenal defensive team. They're not. Yeah. They're not. I don't care where you played them, on the road, at home. In Russia, it doesn't matter. Like, you're not Oklahoma, a little bit better. But I saw an Auburn team who's extremely mediocre on offense move the ball against both these teams. I think right now the offense for Tennessee just feels fraudulent to me. You beat NC State. Every team who played NC State's almost dropped 50.
But why is it fraudulent?
Because I think we gassed Nico up way too much. Way too much. Way too much. Including myself. All right, what has he proven? What has he shown against a team that actually has some real players on defense that he can go win a game? His own coach, all right, would rather lay up in a football game and lose than they'd have Nico go get it. What I saw late in that Arkansas game is Josh Heupel make the decision, well, Arkansas's backup quarterback's in, we'll do this, we'll
play conservative. Which is probably the right decision.
Well, Well, sooner or later, you keep making that decision six drives after again and again and again. These guys are athletes. They're a reason in Arkansas. They're going to make some plays. And that's what happened. You have Nico, the one who walked on water, scored 50 against Iowa, like no one business even saw, who's looked extremely mediocre this year. And when you asked him to go get it, right, to go win the football game, he choked and he panicked. Didn't even throw the ball in the end zone. So I think it's our fault.
Yeah,
it's our fault for gassing him up.
Is it what is it? Do we think it's more because these games were on the road? Because you go, and I know NC State is not a good football team. We don't have to sit here and debate that point. But it was a neutral site game, and the offense did click. Now, there were some problems. He turned it over a couple times in that game. But is this a road thing, Dave?
That's a really good question. That's why I picked Oklahoma to beat Tennessee preseason, because I said, hey, this will be young Nico's first true road experience. And they go on the road and figure out a way to win that one. I do think that's a valid question. To Blaine's point, I had a lot of Tennessee haters early in the year responding to me on social media on Nico's clip saying, yeah, that's fine throwing 70-yard touchdowns, but against Kent State or against, he hasn't played anybody yet. And I defended him saying some of the things he's doing in the pocket are great even if you're doing them against air. Yeah. The competition will come. Well, now the competition has come and he hasn't looked quite so good. So, I think most of those people were just saying that because they are Tennessee haters, but they've kind of been proven right. And to your point, the most alarming thing that I saw beyond all the rest of the games and any other plays he had, not throwing the football into the end zone
tight,
at the
man.
Very end of the game.
It seems like he doesn't know what he's looking at. Like, I remember watching that Arkansas game where he had time in the pocket, even with pressure coming, and he'd look up and not know what he's looking at.
Well, you know what? And you may be right. Like, you may be right. But guess what? If you look up and don't see it, you know what you need to do? Take off.
Take off and run.
I watched you cook Iowa. Like, I've watched him run. It is almost, I don't know which one it is because I don't know him. Either he is not trusting himself to say, you know what, sometimes I do need to backyard it. Sometimes I do need to go out here and out-athlete some people. Or it's to the point where he's trying to make the point to everybody else, just like Jalen Milroe did at points last year early for Alabama, that, look, I know I can run, but I'm not a runner. How many times do we hear quarterbacks that can run say that? Oh, I know I can run, but I want to prove to people that I can throw it. Dude, make the best play there.
I just don't know if like that was the same. No one really looked at Nico as just a runner.
I'm not saying
well, that bowl game,
just
didn't he have like four running touchdowns against Iowa?
Yeah, but he threw like 300
yeah,
plus.
Yeah, he cooked them. But it's, I'm telling you, it's like a human condition thing. Like it's looked down upon, like you're not truly a quarterback. If you're running, opens up your pass game or... if you're not throwing the ball well, it can get you out of trouble. He's not even using it to get him out of trouble.
I hope that's not the case.
Like, I hope it's not the case either. But I don't know him.
Let me ask you one last question here. So if Tennessee responds against Florida the same way that Ole Miss responded against South Carolina, you phrased it a second ago as, oh, they'll probably go out and win by 50 or something. If something like that happens, and this game is at Neyland, is that going to validate your theory that maybe he just has a road problem?
I mean, it would make it look a lot more viable. And if I'm a Tennessee fan, I would rather it be that. I'd rather have a road problem than a road and home.
Well,
problem.
I mean, because after that, you're going to get Bama at home, Kentucky at home, Mississippi State at home. You have to go to Georgia in between the hedges, UTEP at home, and then at Vanderbilt. So only two more true road games after this.
Yeah, and that Vandy game looks a little bit scary at the end of the year. But yeah, I think it would. If he balls out at home, yes, you would feel good. You want to see him ball out. All right, I think maybe you're like, all right, now he can take it on the road and we'll see if it works, whatever, even though you do get those games at homes like you just mentioned in the row, including Alabama. But, yeah, I think it would validate more. Maybe this is a road problem. But if you got a problem finding a sports book you like, or maybe you haven't even gotten to the sports gambling game and you're just trying to mix it up, you want to dip your toe in the water. Well, don't dip your toe in the water. Do a cannonball into this son of a gun with our friends over at betonline.ag. You can bet on pretty much anything over there. It's not even just sports. They've got stuff you can bet on that I'm not even smart enough to understand. The website's really easy to navigate, whether it's player props, team props, parlays, whatever. They're going to have it. They have them on time. They get them out really, really early. And the payout methods are very versatile. However you want to get paid out, you don't have to worry about it. It's protected, and they get it out to you quick. And right now, if you head over to betonline.ag and you use promo code BOOSTER, that's BOOSTER, you get a 50% sign-up bonus of up to $250 plus BetOnline is tossing in a free 100 spins in their casino for all who sign up ahead of this year's presidential election. That's betonline.ag. Use promo code Booster, B-O-O-S-T-E-R. BetOnline, where the options are endless, and so is the fun. Let's get to the chat now.
All right, Chad, hit that like, hit that subscribe button. If you donate, it's on topic. It will get read. Let's start the day off with Ethan Smith. Ethan, what's up? I'm a lifelong Tennessee fan. I called a loss against Arkansas, and I'm calling a loss against Florida as well. Florida can be the worst team in the country, but they always find a way to beat Tennessee. Matchups make fights.
No, they do, but Tennessee still should match up better with Florida than Florida matches up with Tennessee, and I think they do. I'm going to be interested to see Florida's offensive line against this Tennessee front seven, even though Tennessee's front seven was held in check for the most part against Taylen Green, or at least way more than what we thought, including myself. I thought it was going to just be an absolute triage tent for that offensive line. If Florida wins this game against Tennessee, you want to talk about there's no more walking out to Morgan Wallen concerts anymore. All those good feelings, right? It's like Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, when they catch the guys doing drugs in the bathroom. It's like it turns all your sad feelings into happy feelings. This does the exact opposite. I mean, David, it would have come crashing down in an unbelievably intense way really, really quickly.
Yeah, because you would have lost to two of the teams who their coaches were at the very top, one and two spots, for getting fired before the season. And not only that, but just from a practical scheduling standpoint, now you'd have to thread the needle for the rest of the year and
be perfect.
Georgia and Alabama and everyone else. Whereas before, you had built up some equity to where it's like, okay, can we at least split those two maybe and still find ourselves in the SEC championship game?
No, without a doubt.
All right, let's go to Kennedy. Kennedy, what's up? He says, Arkansas's defense is holding opponents under 17 points per game. Far from mediocre, maybe it's more about Arkansas's D than Tennessee's offense.
And look, I think Travis Williams, you talk about hitting the coordinator lottery. What Sam Pittman's got at Arkansas right now with Bobby Petrino on the offensive side and T-Will on the defensive side. T-Will's going to get him a big head coaching job before it's said and done. And I hope he does, and he's going to be a problem when he does, similar to what Fran Brown's doing up in Syracuse right now. But when I look at the personnel that Arkansas has, you want to talk about getting every inch. Not that they don't have that they don't have talented players. I know Landon Jackson. They've got a couple other guys that we like a lot. They're going to have a chance to play in the league. But overall, this unit. Now, I always judge a coach based on how well his unit plays to how talented that they are. I feel like in almost every game, including the one against Texas A&M, that Arkansas's defense has rolled out there. They have punched above their weight overall, and they have come through in clutch moments to be able to win some games that you know, we didn't think they were going to. You know, with Tennessee, I mean,
don't you feel like they kind of played down to competition against UAB and Oklahoma?
Yeah,
State?
Yeah.
You gave up 40 and more against of a big, State. You gave up 30 against.
That is true, but
look
at
the trajectory after that game for both those.
Yeah,
programs.
If you look at that UAB game too, where the offense was putting the defense in was really bad spots early. But yes, you can make that point. If there was a blip on the screen, it was UAB, and you know, I always make the argument it's a lot easier to get guys up to play Tennessee than it is to play UAB, and I think you saw that overall for Arkansas, and then UAB's fallen off a cliff. But no, this regardless, what I said, I think stands in that Arkansas is punching above their personnel weight and talent defensively because T-Will, A, is willing to take risks. You watch the amount they stunted in that game against Tennessee up front. It was a lot. And typically you only use stunts as kind of like a blitz overall for a team. They're kind of you know, when to say win on them. They went all in on them against the Volunteers. And Travis knew that's what it was going to take to win. And he was either going to work out well or look really, really bad. And Arkansas got the stops when they needed late to give Singleton and those guys a chance to go down and win.
You saw a lot of the things that I was seeing because Arkansas's defense was taking so many risks with those stunts on not third down. I mean, third downs.
They were doing it all the time.
Known passing downs is one thing, but they were doing it, and they only really got caught on that one big Samson run at the beginning of the third quarter. How much do you think other teams are going to look at that and say, should we be this risky too?
Well, you take a little bit out of each game that you play and watching what the opponent does to the team that you're playing. Now, what we used to do was, you know, it's recency bias. All right, if you just played a game where you didn't play well or the team you're playing, I'm sorry, didn't play well or they lost, all week when they do their corrections and stuff, they're going to be working on what that team did to them that worked because they think we're going to do that to them because we're watching it work against them. So if I know what you're practicing against, I know what you're going to do when we play you. So how much do you say we want to do some of that, but then we also want to make it seem like we're doing some of that and not doing it? Because the best element is the element of surprise. So you may mix it in there some. There may be some pressures that you liked even on third and passing that gave them some problems that you build off of what they did, almost like the defensive version of the RPO, to make them think, hey, guys, look how they're lined up. This is what we practiced against all week because we knew they were going to try and steal it from the team that beat us. But all of a sudden, they do something just a little bit different that causes you to make a big mistake. That's the chess game that we see. So there'll be some, but knowing your personnel, you don't want to have to reach if you don't want to reach. But sometimes it's the illusion of showing you something that you have seen that can give you problems when I do something else.
Illusions, fathers, illusions. All right, let's go to a $10 donation from Mark Safe from Losing. What's up, brother? Was 22 Tennessee's offense more about Golish or Heupel? Because ever since Golish left, we've stopped stretching the field vertically and just don't seem as creative.
I mean, it's Heupel's system, but I think Golish had really good feel when it came to knowing when to hit those chunk plays. And I think he's kind of similar to Kotal Nicki, who is at Kansas that's now at Penn State, in that he was not going to go more than 10 plays without taking a shot, whether he hits it or not, just to let you know defensively, we haven't forgot about you back here. Stop creeping those safeties up. This ain't inside drill. So again, I kind of feel bad for Golish now because he didn't have a guy that can throw it down the field. So he's relegated at South Florida to having to keep things short and intermediate. But I think it did have something to do with that. But we need to move on here, Dave.
All right, let's move on. Let's preview Southern Cal hosting Penn State. Penn State up to number 4 in the country right now. This line's going crazy, man. It's already up to -5.5 Penn State. Obviously, SC with a couple disappointing conference losses now. One to Michigan, that was 27-24. And then this past weekend, Minnesota 24-17. Meanwhile, Penn State still cruising 5-0 right now.
I want to trust Penn State. I want to trust Penn State, David. I really do. You know, that was a question with Drew Aller coming in this year with a new offensive coordinator that I just mentioned that I think has helped him. I think you're seeing it. I think he's more confident in pushing the ball down the field and willing to let his talent really blossom instead of being kind of, you know, hidden in the big moments because he didn't want him to screw it up. But something about this game is telling me that USC is going to win. Maybe it's how drunk college football has been. Right when we think we know something for sure, we find out we know nothing at all. In most cases, USC lost to Michigan in a heartbreaker there at the end. Then you lose to Minnesota in a similar fashion, kind of heartbreaker there at the end. And remember, Minnesota gave Michigan a game, and I think you got to make sure and give Minnesota credit there. But do we believe fully in this Penn State team who I watched? And, you know, I want to give UCLA credit that LSU struggled with them for a while. They've gotten up for some of these big games. Penn State struggled with them for a while. There's something about Penn State I don't trust. I know they're talented. But is this one of the games where Miller Moss freaks out and Lincoln Riley freaks out and it turns into kind of a track meet which Penn State isn't expecting and Drew Aller makes that big turnover at the end? I want to lean Penn State, but it's always going to go back to this with me and USC. Can you stop the run? And when you look at what Penn State still wants to do, regardless of the new offensive coordinator, they want to line up and give it to the couple backs they got, Singleton, Allen, that can really push the pace and take a lot of pressure off Drew. But just something about this game, man, whether it's a special teams touchdown, I just feel like USC is going to win it. Because why not, David? Because why not?
I know USC will be at home this weekend as opposed to being on the road like they were against Minnesota. But I just feel like if Lincoln Riley and Miller Moss weren't able to exploit Minnesota's defense, then I just don't know if they're going to be able to do the same against Penn State. And you're not going to have the benefit of this being some sort of trap game because USC is a bigger brand than Penn State is, and they're in the conference for the first time. You're going to play them at the Coliseum. I just don't see Penn State overlooking them. I feel like the only way for USC to win is to turn Drew Aller over, right? Create like, you know, strip sack fumble, maybe get a tip ball interception, pick six, something like that. Combined with USC being able to be efficient on offense, I think that could work. But I don't know. I was particularly disappointed in the Minnesota loss for
USC. And Blaine, to David's point, every game that USC's gotten in that's been smushy, that's been a little bit, you know, slower and slugged out, they've lost. You know, that LSU game, I know there wasn't a million points scored, but that thing was up and down, right? That was kind of more gunslinger, Miller Moss getting away with some things, making some incredible throws. We talk about styles make fights. If you're Penn State going into this game, going on the road, knowing that USC has played absolute physical showdowns in the last 3 weeks, and they're still getting used to Big Ten play, do you just go down there and say, you know what, Drew, we believe in you. We're still going to take our shots off play action. But why would we not make USC prove that they can stop the run and then see if our defense can get after Miller Moss's ass and make him lose the game, as opposed to go out there and say, you know what, let's turn this into a shootout with Drew Allard. This is the new Penn State. We got a new OC. We're going to SoCal and slinging this thing around.
I don't think they will. I think you're about to play a team that's Minnesota, but two times better. Minnesota ran the ball for 200 yards against you. And I promise you, these guys are about to roll in. And Penn State love to run the ball and play defense. And the defense for Penn State's a lot better than the one at Minnesota. Miller Moss got to quit turning the ball over. All right, especially when you come and play these teams like this. Every possession is so important because you don't have much time on the clock because everybody loves to run the football. Turnovers will kill you in this game. I like Penn State, and I think there's a reason they're number four in the nation right now. I don't think they're going to put it on Drew Allard. I don't know why you would. Right now, if I'm Penn State, I'm going to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, keep everything in front of me on defense, and see if if you can catch Miller Moss pushing some passes in places he shouldn't, which he's done the last couple weeks. So the line's a little bit funny right now from a percentage standpoint. They have USC with 53% chance to win, but the line's laying Penn State. I like Penn State, probably not to cover. If I bet this game, it will be money line, but this will be a line of scrimmage game for another week for USC, and sooner or later, those tallies, those hits, those all
well, the depth, right? The depth on USC's defense is what we were worried about, and this is what happens when you go through a schedule like this in a conference like this. Yes, your legs are tired from running, but it's the line of scrimmage of getting just pounded on and pounded on and pounded on. Then all of a sudden, you know, you got your second team three tech that now is having to play. He was third team, a Bear Alexander redshirt. Or like there's a linebacker that's hurt or a safety goes down. This part of the year, this I call it the fat part of the year, the middle part of the year, is when those twos and those threes that you've been hoping could save you to get by a week, you know, come in. But you would think that'd be the Minnesota game. Mm-hmm. You'd think it would be the game that's sandwiched in between Michigan and Penn State, but it's not.
Now you got guys saying, hey, I want a red shirt. Just like you mentioned, Bear Alexander, that only hurts your depth when they say, no, I'm not going to play the rest of the year.
And Penn State's hungry, man.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that an undefeated team has that advantage because, you know, guys aren't trying to opt out of that, even though UNLV was a different situation. But there's a lot at stake in the Big Ten this weekend, because when the Buckeyes go to Oregon, one of those teams is coming out with a loss, right? You can't come out of that unblemished. And we have been talking about, hey, what's that second team in the Big Ten that's really going to like go and take that mantle? And before USC got that loss to Michigan, a lot of us said, maybe that could be them. I think Penn State has now sort of taken that over, depending on what happens with the Buckeyes and Oregon. And depending on if Penn State overlooks this game or just flat out gets beat, this weekend, the landscape of the Big Ten is going to become more
clear. Well, and we feel like we know Michigan, right? We feel like we know who Michigan, even with Tuttle coming in and showing us some things, we feel like we know where Michigan's ceiling is, right? I think there's still, the jury is still out on Ohio State, all right, on Oregon, on Penn State. Washington, I think we still kind of know who Washington is. You're going to have good and bad, but I think those three teams, again, we're going to find out a lot more this weekend, even though Penn State, who, by the way, can we pull up Penn State's rest of their schedule really, really quickly? Because I want to let the people know who are like, well, you know, Penn State's biggest competition is always Ohio State and Michigan. Well, they only have one of them on the schedule this year.
Yeah, they got SC on the road, obviously, at Wisconsin, Buckeyes at home, Washington at home, at Purdue, at Minnesota, and Maryland at home.
Wow.
That's why I had them 11-1.
You win this one, it's going to be really hard not to go 11-1. But again, college football's so drunk, who knows? But if they're going to go 11-1, they need a lot of energy, all right? They probably need a clean shot of it, all right? Not any sugar or caffeine. And with our friends over at Ketone IQ, they got you absolutely covered. That's why they work close with top Olympic athletes like Des Linden, Michael Andrews, and Ironman world champion Sam Laidlow. Ketone IQ has unlocked the benefits of drinkable ketones. All right, this isn't a key on a piano. Okay, there's no why in this. All right, it's an ancient source of energy, and you can get it on demand. And compared to other sources of energy like glucose or fat, ketones are a way more efficient fuel that produce more power while using less oxygen. And All right? Your body runs on these. And when you don't have enough of them or they're not operating at the right levels, your energy level drops. You get unwanted weight gain and chronic metabolic diseases. So if you want good, clean energy, not just for the environment, but for your body, you need to check out our friends over at Ketone IQ. And for a limited time, you can save 30% off your first subscription order and receive a free six-pack of Ketone IQ when you go to ketone.com/booster. That's ketone.com/booster for 30% off your first subscription order today. Head over there. I'm telling you, I drink one every single morning. So do the guys. It tastes fine. All right. It's not like some of those energy drinks where you taste it and you don't know if it's, you know, just got out of an old boot or if it was smuggled in by some wizard from another country. You don't know. But Ketone IQ, check them out. Use that promo code. It's a great product. All right, David, let's continue. We're going to get to the chat. Then we'll get to phone calls and huddle up.
All right. A lot at stake in the Big 12 this weekend, too. So 5-0 BYU.
Did you say steak?
5-0 BYU. Do I need to repeat that? 5-0 BYU.
Let's go, Devin.
Hosting 3-2 Arizona. Utah with a Friday night game, 4-1. Going to go on the road and play 4-1 Arizona State. Do I need to repeat that? And then Kansas State going to go play Colorado on the road. Both of those teams, 4-1. Someone's going to have to take control of the conference. Let's start with Kansas State and Colorado. Right now, the line is +3.5. Colorado, 56.5 over under.
If you're Colorado, okay, we talked about how the UCF win was probably your biggest credibility builder. All right, if you want to not only get that credibility that you've been thirsting for, if we want to answer the question of, can Colorado really compete to win the Big 12 even though the Big 12's down? Is Colorado good enough up front on the offensive line and the defensive line to give their playmakers a chance to go win something huge? Beat Kansas State this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about a narrative completely flipping on this head? You wanted this opportunity, but more importantly, you earned this opportunity. You earned a chance, regardless of what anybody has said. And there's things about the way that Colorado handles business that I don't like, that we don't like, and we've said that here. And we have questioned, and rightfully so. I think they've even questioned to themselves their ability up front. But you see, because I'm not worried about Shadur. I'm not worried about Travis. I'm not worried about Horn. I'm not worried about the skill guys. Colorado's whole season and level of success was going to be determined by the line of scrimmage. The more confident those guys get, their play will elevate because of who is around them. And if Colorado is able to find a way, I don't care if it's 70-69, I don't care if it's 7-6 or 1-0, to win this game, number one, Colorado and Deion Sanders deserves their flowers. And number two, now the conversation really has to turn to, can this Colorado team not only win the Big 12, but have a chance to get that automatic bid to the playoff or possibly an at-large spot if they go 10-2? Because make no mistake, the powers that be want Deion in this playoff from a dollars and cents standpoint. And I get why. They're one of the most, you know, national stories that we have. Having said that, I think Kansas State has a great opportunity to show why they moved on from Will Howard or why they were fine with Will Howard moving on, and Avery Johnson being able to go into a hostile environment. Because is it at Colorado or is it
at Colorado?
It's at Colorado, going to a hostile environment where it's going to be more nuts than it has been, and beat them at where we think they're weakest at. Kansas State does not need to turn this into a who can throw the ball better contest, because Shadur's going to win it. They need to early and often, talking about Kansas State, make sure Colorado remembers that Kansas State is a team that is built on the line of scrimmage from the inside out, and Colorado is built from the outside in. And if that's the case, Kansas State will find a way to win. But do not give Colorado confidence early, because if they think they can stalemate up front, and notice I said stalemate, I didn't say win. I don't think they have to win up front. I just think they have to hold up enough up front to give themselves a chance and give those guys around them a chance. So we don't trust Utah because Cam Rising, we don't know what's going to happen. Oklahoma State's a disaster. They're out of it. BYU's a great story. We'll see if that's going to continue. But if Colorado beats Kansas State with what happens with Arizona, this conversation is going to take a different turn, and a turn that Colorado fans probably didn't even think it was going to take.
Well, the equation for Colorado has been fairly straightforward, I think, for a lot of us throughout the season and through the offseason, which is elite skill players combined with, you know, subpar interior lineman play on both sides of the ball don't equal a lot of wins throughout the course of a season.
They don't win championships.
Exactly. The problem with that, what's not factored into the equation, is that if your skill players are going to be this elite, this consistent, and really this reliable in close ball games, like every time Colorado finds themselves in a close football game, they win it. Like, that says something to me about the guys that they have leading this team with Shadur and Travis Hunter. In the Central Florida game, that wasn't even a close ball game. You go and blow them out. And I know that win doesn't look quite as good now after what Florida did to them. But if you can go on the road and beat Central Florida like that, I've said that you can play with anybody in the conference. And if you do that, you can make the college football playoff based on the new format. So, yes, we get a chance to find out so much more now that you're going to play a Kansas State team. But, I mean, Blaine, 3.5 right now on the line, 56 on the over-under. You know, forget all that. Just like from who's going to win the football standpoint, like where are you leaning right now in this?
I mean, I think it's almost a pick 'em at this point. If I were to pick anything, it would be the over. But I don't think Kansas State is as good as what we think they are. I watched BYU beat them to sleep 38-9, and we can sit here and talk about Colorado and all these teams with the flashiness and all that, but there's only one story to me in the Big 12, and that is BYU. That is Retzloff and the boys. These guys are for real, soaking in celebration, whatever they're doing. It's working. They go each Saturday, right, and win football games, and you can roll through their schedule. It's going to be a story. I don't see them losing this week. I see them beating that Arizona team. They're 4.5-point favorite. BYU is slowly stepping into the front seat, the pilot seat, the cockpit.
I can't believe we're sitting here.
Me neither.
Talking about BYU.
Me neither. Some teams take buses. Some teams take bikes. Who cares? Sooner or later, you're going to step on the field and play each other for four quarters. And BYU is showing up each Saturday and tearing people apart. Colorado, great story. Prime, great story. The only story I'm looking at is at Brigham Young University right now and what they're doing on Saturdays.
And obviously, they're undefeated, so they don't have a conference loss. Colorado, 4-1, lost to Nebraska. They don't have a conference loss. So a win, you know, depending on who wins and who loses there, not only could Colorado find themselves ranked, but right there in a position to be in the lead for the conference.
Yeah, and again, I think the Big 12 is probably only going to get one this year, but that's still one. Now, it depends on what Notre Dame does, and we'll see down the stretch. But this is just, it's fascinating. It's a crazy time in college football. Absolutely crazy time in college football. Blaine, I do want to get to the chat here quickly.
All right, let's go to the man who sits when he sleeps. What a name. Says, guys, hey, love the show. Colorado, big one this weekend. I see a W. Are they good enough to win their conference?
Well, it's here's the question, and, you know, we kicked it back and forth. I don't want this to come off as disingenuous to Colorado because two things can be true at once. Colorado can be way better than what we thought, you know, up front, and you give Prime credit and all this stuff. But also the Big 12 has just, who scares you to win a national championship out of there? The closest one to me is Utah, but I can't trust Cam Rising to play.
Well, forget a national championship. I'm not sure the conference has a team to win a playoff game right now.
I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. I mean, to your Kansas State point, Blaine, I mean, yeah. I mean, Kansas State's not world beaters. Oklahoma State's not anything crazy. I mean, we're sitting here talking about BYU, Colorado, and Arizona State. That's who we're talking about right now. And it's just to the point where you look around the ACC and you're like, yeah, Miami's just surviving. But we know they can do some things. Then you look at Clemson, you're like, damn, they can really do some things. Then you look at even a team like Pitt that not enough people are talking about and what they're doing. They just went on the road and beat North Carolina with Eli Holstein. If you haven't seen him, that Bama transfer, he's got some 8 mile in him. He's got some dog in him at quarterback, too.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up the standings because Iowa State's right there, too.
Iowa State's another team. I don't think they're getting talked about enough.
Yeah, Iowa State's still 5-0, too.
But that's where Iowa State wants to be. I think Iowa State wants to be in
right,
that spot.
Right, I agree.
Texas
right,
Tech 3-0 in the conference, too, right now.
Yeah, and Joey McGuire and them coming back with that big win over Arizona. So it's not that the Big 12's not fun to watch. You can make an argument that it's maybe the most fun conference to watch this year with this much parity in there and BYU surprising people. But anybody who thinks that, like, we know anything about the Big 12 and who's going to win it, this one is the most unknown there is.
What do we really know about any team?
That's a great point.
Oklahoma State 0-3 in conference play.
It just goes to show you.
Wow.
You just never know. All right. Well,
all right, let's go to The Nation. What's up, man? It says, Jake, I am a Penn State fan, and I totally get that feeling. I can't really put my finger on it, but for some reason, I just don't trust this team.
Well, and it's one thing when you've been let down so much. Like, in Penn State's won a lot of games with James Franklin, but they haven't got over that hump. So you're always feeling like, what bad's going to happen? What bad's going to happen? Who's going to keep us from getting a chance to do it? And I get that, and it makes sense. But this game specifically to me, and maybe it's because of all the craziness recently in college football. Maybe it's just because it's like, look, Vandy's beating number one ranked Bama. Tennessee's going and losing to an Arkansas team that, you know, a lot of people had buried Sam Pittman, including us, and he's found a way to somehow turn it around. Like, there's never been a harder time to project what's going to happen. But that's, to me, when you got to go even further into your instincts. And just your natural intuition from having been around it. And everybody's going to be pounding on USC this week. Look at Lincoln Riley. Look at his record over the last 13, 14 games. And they're right. You should point that out. I'm not saying you shouldn't. But there is something about this game with Penn State going out there that I'm having a hard time trusting Penn State to win it. Not just to cover. I'm not talking about USC just covering 5.5. I don't know. Something, the Spidey senses are tingling. And when they start tingling, man, typically they're right. That's how I ended up defending the city at night.
Got to trust your clues. All right, let's give me a $50 donation from Dean Olson. Appreciate it, Dean.
$50.
I'm a day late, but saw my Hoosiers beat Northwestern at the best high school stadium in the country this weekend. Can I officially call you guys member of the SIG Hoosiers bandwagon? And should Curtis, let me finish. And should Curtis Rourke be getting some day one or two NFL looks?
Well, it seems like the Rourke's been playing college football for 70 years, right? They were all at Ohio this long. You can see, like, when whatever the first family that came over here to America, you can trace them. They went straight to Ohio and started playing quarterback for 70 years. This is all I ask. You know, when we have no problem coming on here and admitting when we're wrong, because it's impossible to be right about everything. Hell, even coaches don't know what to expect on Saturday. But when we're right about stuff, I love getting flowers about it. And I don't know, everybody's now on this Kurt Cignetti bandwagon. You know, you're seeing the people doing the smoke and the cig stuff now.
Makes you
on
sick.
Shows, right? When we were doing that during the summer.
Not me. I want you to know the season, guys.
Well, mostly
right
Jake.
Here. Yeah.
Like,
I knew he was a heck of a coach, but I didn't know it was going to be like this.
Look, this is why I keep saying, Florida, listen, y'all keep talking about Lane Kiffin. I get it. But if you want that swag back, what's better than that cool dad? What's better than that cool dad swag that Kurt Cignetti's got?
I just don't know if it's swag.
It is swag.
I just don't know if that's the right
word. It comes in all shapes, forms, and facts.
It's like cool goofiness.
He's like cool, Gus Malzahn, but cool. Like Gus Malzahn, but hey, why are you hanging out in 1716?
It kind of looks like him.
Like he does. Look at him. Like half the pants adjustments are in games. But Kurt Cignetti is a cooler version of Gus Malzahn.
I want to know what it was like going to that game at Northwestern that he's talking about. Because I know it's like it's a high school stadium or whatever, but it's right there on the lake. It looks sick.
No, it's like a great setup. Again, people were making fun of it, and I get it, before the season or whatever. A lot of it was because of the Northwestern stuff. But Kurt Cignetti, Dean, we're right there with you. But speaking of right there with you, each Tuesday, right, we have a great segment where we want to help you win the water cooler. We want to get... We talk about the granular stuff, too. Really get in there and get some
answers.
Like Interstellar. Basically, we turn this into Interstellar for a couple minutes. David Cohn's, huddle up.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's got a flavor of an upset that may replace the one against App State in his mind. Huddle up, David Cohn.
All right, huddle up. Let's get in 13 personnel and go pistol. Bundle left, yellow 5, switch, H follow. Vanderbilt shocked the nation this weekend by beating number one ranked Alabama, and they did so with plays like this one. So let's break it down. 3 minutes to go in the third. Vandy leads 23-21, and it's 4th-and-1. The Commodores elect to go for this, so they come out in 13 personnel, 1 running back, 3 tight ends, and they line up in this cool formation into the boundary. So all 3 tight ends bunched together there, plus the X receiver and the running back in this pistol set directly behind the quarterback. Now, Vandy had a lot of success moving the football on the ground in heavy personnel groupings for most of the game, which helped set up play action. And that's exactly what we get here. A play fake into the boundary, which I'm calling yellow five. And this is also our pass protection. Full seven-man slide protection with the running back and one of those tight ends staying into block. And from there, Vandy runs switch release verticals, which is one of the most popular concepts in football right now. Essentially, your number one outside receiver, your number two inside receiver are running vertical routes, but they switch off the line of scrimmage. And Vandy adds a cool wrinkle here. That H-back that's there in the bunch formation, he follows that outside vertical because this football really is supposed to come out now. All we need is 1 yard. Let's hit him right now before that turns into a full wheel route. The only problem is with how much success Vanderbilt had on the ground throughout the game, combined with the play fake, Alabama's secondary ends up getting so low that Junior Sherrill's able to get behind him. And from there, Diego Pavia gives him a chance. Put it up on 4th and 1. Imagine hitting this play to extend your lead over Alabama. And this wasn't some fluke win. The Commodores led for the entire ball game. What a performance by Diego Pavia. What a win for head coach Clark Lee. A lot of it was because of plays like this one. This is 13 personnel, pistol, bundle left, yellow five, switch, H follow.
David, great stuff. This goes back to basically what we were saying during the recap was, how do you close the talent gap? Even though Vanderbilt's as talented as they have been in a long time, how do you close the talent gap with Bama some? A lot of it is eye candy and doing multiple things that can slow them down. I mean, this is like, you know, the you're hanging out at a bar and you run into some girl and she's hilarious and she's doing like impressions and all these things with her hands, you know, and you don't realize her eyebrows are drawn on. Like David, it's one of those things that takes your attention, doesn't let you play fast or just put everything out there for you. This is a pick play, basically, right? Like it's a version of
wasn't
a pick play
man.
With the switch release. So if they did come in man, that just feels like a play to me, David, that when they were going over, hey, 3rd and shorts, our situation, this is one we want to run. Make sure we get it out quick to this guy. And Diego Pavia is like, well, what about Sherrill on the on the go? He's like, don't worry about that. We're just trying to run that safety off. Yeah. Don't even worry about him. And then during the game, the first one's a little bit covered up. So you work back to that and it hits for a touchdown. But Vanderbilt was doing such a great job of giving so many different looks and testing the eye discipline of Bama. And they were able to hit him deep. It just, Tim Beck called the game of his life. Diego Pavia played the game of his life. And man, they earned that one.
Yeah.
I just worry about your health. I know your wife just watched that. For sure.
And Michigan lost.
We went over it last night. Okay. We went over it. I said, it has to be done.
Soul,
if Michigan's not exempt from Texas got their play
soul,
this year. It called a perfect game. Had everything working, and surprisingly in heavy personnel groupings. You know, a lot of these teams say, okay, you know, if we're going to beat Alabama, let's just come out in 10 personnel and 5 just wide and just see if we can get lucky on some deep shots. That was 13 personnel. You're lined up with 3 tight ends against Alabama. They did it for multiple times in the game. They had the shovel passes working multiple times. They hit them on shovel routes. There were multiple plays you could have picked from this game.
You had the 3 pillars of what you had to have. You had Lady Luck for Vanderbilt, which balls bounced your way. Ball pops up in the air. You pick it, run and go, you know, have an interception. You need the Joker, which is a guy that can make a play when the play breaks down and maybe get to that 3rd read. And that's what Diego Pavia did all night, including on 3rd down. And then you need the sensei. You need discipline. And they didn't make stupid mistakes, hit guys out of bounds, elongate drives for Alabama. So they had the 3 pillars, Lady Luck, the Joker, and the sensei.
Good
and that's how you're able to pull that one off. But speaking about senseis, I know they can't see the future. None of us can. But wouldn't it be cool, all right, if we were able to wager or have an event contract for predicting outcomes, all right? Like, you know, that's way more reliable than traditional polling methods. Well, our friends over at Kalshi, and I need y'all to just ride with me on this one for a second. This is one of the coolest things that I've seen. So they're revolutionizing the way we think about the future. It's called Kalshi, Kalshi, and it's the first legal prediction market in the United States. Now, what does that mean? It means you can actually put your money where your mouth is when it comes to elections and a whole lot more, all right? From economic indicators to climate change predictions. So whether you want to profit from your insights or participate in the most accurate forecasts out there, Kalshi is your answer. All right. And if you sign up today at kalshi.com/booster, that's kalshi.com/booster. All right. When you deposit $100, they'll give you an extra $20 to trade with. That's right. They're basically paying you to join the prediction revolution. All right. I'm going to spell it out again. kalshi.com/booster. Deposit that $100, receive that $20 free to trade. It's really that simple. Don't wait. Head over there today and at least just check it out. I think you guys, I was looking at it earlier. We were excited when they joined up. It's a very, very interesting thing that, I don't think a lot of people know exists. So make sure you check that bad boy out. All right, David, speaking about checking out though, very quickly before we get to calls, what are your best and worst from the NFL?
Well, I guess I'm not getting dinner for the rest of the week. That's already
yeah,
been decided
I told
in the
you,
chat.
I was worried about your health, yeah.
Wow. All right. So best, you know, I was going to go with Caleb Williams and the Bears, but I'm actually going to go with the Jags. Getting their first win of the year. You know,
did it!
Did the Jags try and blow it late against the Colts? Yes, they tried to blow it late, but Trevor Lawrence, 28 of 34, 371, multiple touchdowns. Brian Thomas Jr., 5 catches, 122 yards and 1 touchdown. Thank you, Blaine, for convincing me to start him in my flex this week. And then the boy Tank Bigsby, 13 carries, 101, 2 touchdowns. Hey, big win for the Jags. Don't know if it'll be their last this year, but they won a game.
Yeah, Dougie P, congrats. All right, my best, the Broncos.
Problem.
Started out 0-2, win their last 3 with Bo Nix, the 40-year-old rookie. He's basically Dennis Quaid in every movie that's ever happened that's been related to sports. I'm loving what I'm seeing. I like what I see from the defense. It just smells good in Denver. Right? I know the Raiders aren't fantastic, but you beat the Jets, who I'm going to get to my worst here in a minute. But just want to give a shout-out. A lot of people left the Broncos for dead after struggling in the first couple games and dropping them. But they have found a way to win 3 in a row, and they've won them in 3 different ways. And it looks like Sean Payton, guys, may have been right about liking hanging out with Bo Nix at Dave and Buster's or whatever.
Bo's look good, though. I've been impressed with Bo. He's getting better and better. My best, the Giants.
Wow.
They won a football game.
The Jags and the Giants.
They won a football game without Malik Nabers, which I just did not think they could. Yeah, shout out producer Justine. It's going to be looking really good, especially Tracy Jr., over 100 yards. Wandale Robinson's going to be
Wandale's so good.
You have young talent. Only thing you have to do now is replace Daniel Jones, and you can actually be a team.
I don't think people
who would be afraid of
realize how good Wandale Robinson was at Kentucky.
He's the reason Will Levis in him.
Like, if you go back, like, Wandale Robinson saved them so many. He's a little witch, too. He ain't a big guy. I mean, Nabers is a pretty big guy. Blaine, what's your worst?
My worst is a guy who has more lawsuits settled than touchdown passes. That's Deshaun Watson. It's the Cleveland Browns.
It's bad.
What a disaster.
It's terrible.
And it's only getting worse and worse and worse. I mean, the guy's making what? He's made over $8 million per touchdown pass since getting traded to Cleveland, which is crazy. Here go the Browns again, signing another quarterback for way too much money. That's not going to produce, but it's going to help me because a guy drafted Nick Chubb in my fantasy league, and guess who's coming back this week?
Yeah. Yeah, Chubba
Wamba. Pow, pow, pow. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, and how about the Commanders, too, dude? Jaden Daniels and them are cooking.
Man, they look
they
good.
They are cooking. My worst, the Jets. Damn, y'all. Damn! You get Aaron Rodgers, he rips his Achilles the first possession of the season last year, and we're through 5 games, and they fired Xerxes' kid.
Fired Robert Saleh.
They fired Xerxes' kid. He got him out of there, which to me, I know it's a business. Right? They're going to move on from the coach before Aaron, and I like Aaron, but God, now I think something's really wrong. Now the hug's messed up. The lack of the hug's messed up to me. Is Aaron the problem? Is Aaron the problem?
You know what's going to happen?
I don't think you should be out there hugging grown men in the second quarter.
Well, it's okay. Let's get past the hug.
Well, but you brought the hug up.
Should he have been fired, David? Do you think Saleh should have been fired?
Who are you going to go get? Let me just play this scenario out for you. You going to go hire Bill Belichick or
hanging
what?
Out with the man.
You going to go bring him back to the division or what?
Say,
hey, you want revenge?
Bob Vrabel.
Huh?
Of Vrabel.
Vrabel.
D.C.?
Vrabel's out there.
D.C.? Come on.
There's a guy walking
Vrabel out. And Aaron
Peyton
Rodgers.
Manning, O.C.?
Vrabel giving some serious Dan Campbell vibes.
Come on.
With the Jets.
There's a guy walking around Tuscaloosa right now is Redding and Will.
Okay, we're having a serious conversation.
Yeah, Nate Oates isn't taking the job.
So what's going to happen? You're just going to interim now for the rest of the year? Are you going to make a mid-season hire? You could say, Bill, I know you're on the Manning cast every Monday.
Yeah, I think Bill wants to come back.
I think he does, too. Even though, I mean, he is hanging out with that, like, 20-year-old.
Hey,
he's wearing Taylor Swift sweatshirts.
It's love, Jay.
It is love. I'm sorry. It's love. You're right.
It's disgusting.
Talking about that division quickly, my worst, the Buffalo Bills. Do you see the end of that game against the Texans?
Yeah.
20-20 at the end.
What are you
Texans
doing?
Texans punt them the ball with 40 seconds left. I don't know what's going on. Bills taking multiple shots downfield. They have to punt the football back to the Texans. You're pretty much in field goal range the second you get the ball back. Kyahmi Fairbairn hits the game.
I'm sure the analytics said throw it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The analytics are like, oh, you should definitely throw it.
I mean, what do you guys make of that?
I just thought it was some of the worst clock management. And you're on the road. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, what? You got Josh Allen. You're lucky for this game to be in overtime. You've had to come all the way back for it to be in overtime. You're figuring out C.J. Stroud and them a little bit. Like, dude, go to overtime. What are you doing? You're trying to do way too much. I just want to know, like, I know quarterbacks have a lot of leeway in the NFL. They got a lot of leeway in college now, but I was shocked by that.
Did y'all catch that Ravens-Bengals game?
Yeah.
Goodness.
So, kind of
who can blow
thing,
it
man.
First?
It's just, it's crazy to me. Like, Joe Burrow is putting up phenomenal numbers, and his team's, what, 1-4?
And, dude, the Ravens tried to give it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, fumbled the snap.
They fumbled the snap and gave it to you in field goal range.
And that's, like, one of the coolest things about football, man. It really takes every single person on the team. The holder cost you that game. The holder bobbled it, cost you that game. That's why you can't get rid of special teams.
Very true.
It's an important part of the game.
Thank you, David.
All right, who wants call-ins?
Let's do it.
All right, let's take some calls. Let's start off with Chad in Louisiana. Chad, talk to us.
What's up, boys?
What's up, Chad?
Oh, nothing, man. I love how y'all call college football drunk. But you know what? That's some of the best football I've seen in years.
It's like they say about the KFC. It's like they ask him, like, hey, is this batch good? He's like, yeah, I'm way too drunk to taste this chicken.
Well, some of the best times of my life I was drunk, so it actually correlates.
Yeah,
I just hope Ole Miss comes in drunk at Tiger Stadium Saturday.
Man, who's going to win that game, Chad?
That game. Do you want to talk about one that – like the margins are so small when you're projecting it. Like I want to trust Jackson Dart more than I do Nussmeier. But when you really go back and think about it, what big games is Jackson Dart really balled out in? Like, and I know that LSU, this isn't a top five matchup and each team has played in bigger games overall. But when you look at where both of them are at, I know Ole Miss has the one loss to Kentucky in conference play, but this game is massive.
They need to treat every game like a
this
top
is
five
so
matchup,
massive no. for each team. Chad, how are you feeling about it?
I'm still concerned about the defense, but Harold Perkins being out, see how the defense does and see if we can put pressure on him.
Well, if
he's ever balled out in a big game, it's y'all.
Yeah.
Like, last year threw for 390. The year before that, balled out. So, I mean.
Well, it's this game. We always talk about, you know, it comes down to multiple things. But LSU's ability to tackle in space is what would scare the hell out of me for this game. Because you know Lane knows that. And Ole Miss has guys on the outside that they can throw the now screen to or they can throw the hitch to. And if you're going to say, well, I'm worried about us playing too close in man and getting beaten over the top, you can't sit here and run a safety over everything. But if they start giving a lot of cushion, LSU does, Ole Miss is going to take that.
Yeah, for sure.
They'll throw the 7 yards. They'll throw sticks routes all day on the outside and make you tackle it.
Chad, what do you think? How do y'all win this game?
Ground and pound. Keep the ball out of their hands. That's it.
Buck it up.
Well,
buck it up.
I would just be surprised to see that LSU team do that. I don't know if LSU is capable.
If they have that in them.
If they can just turn around, run the ball. The old Les Miles days.
Like from a pride standpoint or from an ability standpoint?
Both.
Oh.
Well, will Nuss overthink it at some point?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't think that he is like scared. That's not what I was trying to say the other day. But when you see how much he anticipates throws that work out well, like he is a very, you know who his father is, obviously Doug Nussmeier has been around it. Some guys, those guys that can overthink, man, and they take unnecessary risks. It's like when they heat him up, he's willing to, he's really a gunslinger. Like we talk about Miller Moss in that game. Go back and watch Nussmeier in that game. There's some throws he's making, the guy's two steps off the line of scrimmage. Like it's insane.
Yeah, he's definitely good with that kind of throw. But lastly, so I'm assistant coach for my sixth grade daughter's basketball team. Got six players on the team, so they run all game. Looking for our first win. See if you can give them a motivational speech. The team is the Lady Pelicans.
Ooh,
the Lady
Peas.
Pelicans.
Get them up, Crane.
Pelican.
All right, sixth grade. You said looking for their first win?
First dub.
Yep.
All right. First dub. All right. Playing it. Play it.
Play the drums.
There's only six of us. Six. You have to play with five, no. Which means we got one sub. Which means if somebody forgets their shoes, nobody better get hurt.
Subway sandwich.
But that's all we need. They call it middle school for a reason. You want to know why? Because you're in the middle of learning how to dominate. And eventually you're going to find out. Some people wait years, years to dominate. And then all of a sudden they're 37 and rich and everybody loves them. But we're not worried about that right now. We need to get our first dub, but we need to do it together. And that's by listening to Coach Chad and hoping that LSU figures it out this weekend at home against Ole Miss. So ladies, it doesn't matter who you're playing. It just matters that you're playing. And you're getting that first dub this week.
Yep.
Let's go get it.
Either you win or Pelicans. You don't eat dinner.
Pelicans! Mm. Pelicans!
I don't think that's the sound a pelican makes, but I like it.
How do you know, Dave? I grew up at the beach.
There you go, Chad.
Thanks, Chad. Appreciate it, man. Sorry, I sneezed. Sorry, I sneezed during your motivational speech.
Like, if you ever do that again, David,
Forrest Gump interrupted that. Forrest Gump interrupted that Black Panther party. That
is he like me?
Sorry, I interrupted your Black Panther. All right, let's move on here. Leroy in Alabama. Leroy, what is going on?
Leroy!
What is up, dude? What is up?
That's so good.
What a happy day, fellas.
Man.
You know, I was going to call in and cry about Tennessee's embarrassing loss to Arkansas, but we've moved on. We've moved on.
On to Cincinnati.
No. We got sights set on Florida, all right? And I think it's possible that they just completely overlooked the Hogs because they just want to beat Florida.
To who? You overlooked the Hogs to Florida? Who's a disaster?
No, Leroy, listen, he's trying to rationalize. Let him get it out.
Go look at Tennessee's record versus Florida, all right? Yeah, they were looking ahead to Florida. They're like, look, well, Florida's down. We can't. We lose to Florida when Florida sucks. So, I can believe that they looked ahead to Florida.
Leroy, first off, it was great seeing you at the Booster Club tailgate, my friend. Thanks for coming. Second off, listen, all right, this show is basically just one big therapy session for everybody. And sometimes a way to maybe make up for this Tennessee team may not be as good as what we thought after all those good vibes. I mean, walking out to Morgan Wallen concerts, just making sense left and right, that maybe it's not as good as what we thought it's our fault. We weren't prepared enough because we thought we were so good that we didn't have to play well to beat Arkansas. Mm-hmm. When I think the fact of the matter might be right now, and there's a lot of potential for growth, and y'all are really good on defense, Leroy, maybe Flaming Dragon's right. Maybe Nico's not ready to be the guy that some of us thought that he was. Maybe this offense isn't where we thought it was, and that's scary, Leroy. I get it. And maybe you're right. Maybe they did overlook him a little bit.
Honestly, I'm not even that worried about that part of it because Nico is a freshman quarterback who has played like a freshman quarterback. Yeah, he was hyped up to do better than that, but you know, you can fall under the weight of those expectations.
For sure. And people have.
I mean, it's not like Tennessee's season has crumbled. I mean, everything that they want is still ahead of them. You just got to go win the game.
Doesn't matter
what game it is, you got to go one game at a time and go win that game.
Without a doubt.
Well, I think it's crazy how, like, when it comes to Nico, how much praise can turn into pressure really quick.
Well, that's playing quarterback.
Skating is now turned into pressure. But if we're talking about therapy, you know, I think the first step we need to do is not lie to ourselves. All right? Y'all weren't looking over Arkansas. Y'all just lost the football game, right? And it's the same thing. You go back to the week before.
You let me dream. You let me dream, okay?
Dude, look, as an Auburn fan, I get it. Trust me, I get it. I know how it works.
This is our lives now.
I know the ins and outs, but, like, something's wrong. And if y'all go, you end up like a season crumbling, go lose to Florida this
year. Yeah, I don't think y'all will, though, Leroy. Mm-hmm. We'll see, buddy.
Leroy. We appreciate
Leroy
it, man.
Leroy Jenkins.
All right, next up is Cody in Texas. Cody, what's going on?
Hey, go Gators. All suck, just to mention it.
Way to come in strong. That way to come in strong.
I love it, dude.
Hey, first off, guys, second time caller. I love your show. You guys have quickly become one of my favorite shows of all time. Like, ESPN's terrible. Y'all are amazing. So, big fans. Also, too, Jake, so excited you're being a girl dad. I'm hanging out with my 2-year-old right now. My 7-year-old's coming home here shortly. I got you.
Dude, we're 3 months away. Three months away.
Hey, I'm in day 3 of taking care of my 9-year-old.
Yeah, we're like, dude, we're a month away. Yeah, we're a month away from the 2-minute warning. All right, that's the way I'm looking at it.
They just added that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we're going to have to put a damn drive together something here soon.
Did you know that he has a swear jar going right now?
He does?
Yeah, there's a dollar for, or is that
not? Can I get 10% of what goes in there?
It's at 44 right now.
I'm at 44?
44 bucks.
God,
since last night.
That's the under to me.
Love it, love it. Anyway, down to business. As far as Napier's future at Florida is concerned, kind of agree with Blaine. I still don't know if he's going to be the future here coming up. We still see Billy Ball week in and week out. Don't get me wrong, I'm so happy we beat little brother last weekend, but at the second half, we kind of collapsed. We didn't really do a lot offensively speaking. Defensive was a whole nother show I didn't expect. Looked like AA was calling, Austin Armstrong was calling plays there. Instead of Ron Roberts, which was, I don't know if that's true or not. That's just what it looks like. I could be wrong. It was just a wildly different defense that, you know, we're kind of accustomed to seeing through the first 4 games here. But unless some miracle happens for the rest of the season, I don't know, like beat Texas and Georgia, which we all 4 know is not going to happen. I don't see him being the future next year.
So again, we asked, dude, we are back to the same conversation we had before the season. Mm-hmm. What's the number? Mm-hmm. If it's 7, does it have to be the perfect 7? If it's 6-6, it needs to be one of those that you mentioned.
Or is it why like the quality opponent? Is it like 5-7, but you beat Georgia?
Because the number does matter, though, right? Like it's we know it's not going to be 9, right? There's not a great chance that it's 8. But if it's 7-5. Like, and DJ Lagway looks good, and you upset one of these teams we're talking about, right? Like, do they fire him?
But, like, we keep talking about number, and I get it. Like, if you get to that 7 or 8, yeah, sure, great, grand, wonderful. But, you know, we played against Tennessee last year. We beat Tennessee last year. Let's keep talking about that. But, again, we had a first-half dominating performance. But that second half, the offense just slows down. And we do that in some of these big games, and we have big wins. And it's just like, is that Florida-branded football? It's not. Now, if Billy has some sort of change, philosophically speaking, you know, then I'll eat crow. I'll come on the show at the end of the year and say I'm a moron, and Billy's amazing. But, you know, from what I'm seeing now up until this point, I'm just not buying it until something different happens. Because, like, look what Arkansas did. They hired a good OC. Billy still is the OC. And I'm sorry, he's not great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Cody, you bring up some good points, man. Yeah. I think you're probably right on with most Florida fans and kind of where I was on the open right there. But we'll see. Knowing this college football season, who the hell knows?
Well, adios, man. Great call.
Appreciate it, Cody. That was awesome.
Cheers.
All right, let's go to Gannon in Arizona. Gannon, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up,
Gannon?
Dude? All right, I'm here to talk about my Arizona State Sun Devils.
Yeah.
And I'll be real with you. I didn't think we were going to be very good this year. I looked at that win total. I was like 3.5. I was like,
yeah,
we are already past it.
Present.
We are 4-1.
Gannon, probably the most surprising thing is obviously that you are 4-1. But I think on top of that, the cherry on top of that has to be how you've gotten here. It's been the total opposite of how I thought you could possibly get there if you did somehow get to 4-1. I would think you guys are throwing it around, right? Dillingham is getting unbelievably creative because he has to, and you're finding ways to win games with a bad defense like 45-38. That's not the case. That's not the case at all. You guys have some junkyard dog white boy at running back. You're a physical downhill football team where the defense is able to play physical and come up with stops when they need it. Y'all are an old school smash mouth football team And I love it. I think it shows Dillingham's maturity as a head coach to realize, hey, I don't always want it to be like this, but if this is what we're best at, damn it, this is what we're going to do.
And then Sam Levitt's throwing it well enough when you need to.
And that's, again, goes back, he's a quarterback guy, Dillingham is. I mean, just how shocked is everybody?
I mean, there's going to be people who are like, we're going to win the Big 12, we're going to win it all, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like, that's just how it goes. But I mean, for all the, like, the real, like the realistic people this year, I mean, it was like, maybe we get bowl game, maybe we do this, you know, we're still building, it's building on second year. Those are kind of like the language that I heard. And then, man, I'm just so, I think Sam is doing a great job in the offense. I think against Kansas, he had 4 touchdowns and he just, I mean, he went off that late one to win the game. I just thought it was unbelievable performance by him. I mean, yeah, like call him Anakin Skywalker against the Younglings because, man, this kid was dicing up these kids, man.
That's really good. Dude, right now, Arizona State to win the Big 12 odds-wise, what do you think it is?
I'm going to say they are plus 750.
Plus 750.
I'll say plus 4,000.
They're plus 7,500.
Mm.
Plus, I meant to say 7,500. I just said 7,500.
I really don't like those. I don't mind those odds either. The way y'all are built, y'all can play with any team right now in the Big 12.
Yeah, the way the Big 12's built, y'all can play with any team in the Big 12. But Gannon, hey, good luck to you, man. We're going to keep monitoring it. That's for damn sure.
Starts Friday night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Off the Hobbit.
Big one.
Off the Hobbit.
Big one.
That's a huge one. And I'm also the BYU one. I'm just so glad that one's at our place and not in Provo.
Boy, that game looks a lot more consequential than it did before the year, buddy. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm just glad. I don't want to pull Kansas State and go to Provo and just get our ass kicked. So,
no, well, look, you wouldn't be the first.
Place, you know?
Yeah.
They kick your ass and they're super nice to you.
Yeah, that's the saddest part.
Had injury to insult. Not even nice enough to be angry after that.
Yeah, they beat you up and then give you apple pie.
It's crazy, dude.
All right, thanks, man. Gannon. Appreciate it. All right, a couple more here. Let's get to everybody. Jonah in Arkansas, what's going on?
How's it going, guys?
Well, Jonah, what's up, man?
Jake, I just want to know, when Colorado wins this Saturday, are you going to order those 2 hot chips to eat after they end up going to the Big 12 championship game?
That was the deal.
That was the deal. The deal was they had to win the Big 12 championship game or they go
just
to
go
it.
Go to it. Right?
I don't need you to answer. I know what you're going to say.
Let's go to it.
It was getting to there. What was the bet on your end?
Well, we made a separate deal about the Nebraska-UCF game, but they split. So that one,
that's one went
away.
God, the 2 hot chips. Did I really say I would do that?
You did.
I've never turned into a Colorado fan.
What's Avery Johnson's phone number?
Yeah.
I need to throw
it. Not 1 hot chip.
Yeah.
But 2 hot chip.
Would you, had to do that, would you go simultaneous? Would you eat them both at the same time?
Yes, I would go Super Saiyan.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
Has anyone done that?
You could be the first.
I don't know if anyone's eaten multiple.
Parabolic?
It's like what the body goes into past fight or flight mode. It's like it's adrenaline and whatever's past that.
Is that real?
It's a real step.
I don't want to go into that.
Did you read that in a book?
I've read it on the internet.
The biggest book there.
The
digital book.
Jonah, we'll see.
All right, Jonah. Wait, Jonah, do you have to do anything if they don't make the conference championship?
You have to reverse eat that burrito,
right?
He
made that deal on his own.
Oh, wow.
He didn't have to do anything at all. What a
deal. This deal sucks.
What a deal,
Hold on,
Jonah.
Man. I'm going to have to start pulling from Colorado.
Let's go. Prime you and your 4 toes. Let's figure it out.
All right, good.
Oh, man.
He only has 3 toes.
Yeah, and he has 3 toes playing.
Appreciate it, Jonah.
It's Christina.
Read that.
All right. Thanks, Jonah. One more call in today. Let's get to Serb in Georgia. Serb, what's going on?
What is my up, dogs? How are you 3 fantabulous gentlemen doing?
Wow.
And I just feel like you're selling newspapers on a corner in like 1931.
I'd buy it, dude.
What? Sorry?
What?
Pardon? Sorry.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Go ahead.
One more time, please.
Oh, no. I just don't know if you're going to tell me like that somebody's, that John Dillinger just robbed another bank like somewhere in Utah.
He's robbing my house right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's up, man?
Okay. So anyways, man, so the Auburn v. Georgia game last Saturday. Now, if you were watching, you may have seen Georgia score a very controversial touchdown. did not. I mean, like, for like, putting up, like, half of the Auburn fans were going, like, that was a short. So, like, my question is, do you think it was an actual touchdown or a short?
I know. Sir, thanks for the call. I thought the person who made the call for the touchdown, I don't know how you could have seen it better than the other official that marked it short. And then on replay, you really couldn't tell, so they had to stick with what they went with on the field. I thought he was short, but I don't think it would have mattered.
No, it wouldn't have mattered, but I do think they're like, I just don't understand how you could call that a touchdown.
That was, like, where, from a referee the guy who called standpoint, it where he was, yeah.
Like, they're calling, like, certain things, what they don't see it, but they think they...
Well, we've seen this in basketball, like, all the time. Like, down low, some, like, the guy at the top of the key calling fouls down low where the other ref's looking right at him, like, makes the charge call. You're like, what? Like, why wouldn't that be his call? So, sir, I was surprised who called it and the angle they were at. It's just, I didn't think it was a touchdown, but, yeah, but there was a lot of reason.
Thanks for calling in, sir.
Appreciate it, man.
Have a good week.
Thanks, sir. All right, let's get to bets, then donos. Here we go. Here's what I got for tonight. It's college football. That's right, on a Tuesday. A little bit of, I don't know what we call Conference USA action. We got the Fun Belt. We got Maction. Maybe this is just, you know, USA in it or whatever.
That was terrible.
Why don't you think of one? Why don't you think of one?
My idea.
Miles Finch.
Come up with anything.
Yeah. It's a group of asparagus, but they're nervous about the way their pee smells. All right, here's what I got tonight. FIU and Liberty over 55.5. FIU, fifth most points per game in the country, wow. I believe. FIU, sixth most points given up a game in the country. Give me the over. Give me Liberty and FIU and the over. And then I'm going to take Liberty minus 16 because I just like I can't, you know, pick a team with the word ass in their name like UMass. You got FU in your name. That's why, you know, I'm not picking Florida either. Give me Liberty minus 16.
So give you Liberty or give you death, huh?
Give me Liberty or just give me whatever's on Wednesday.
All right. I'm going to go the same thing. Liberty minus 16, minus 110, but then I'm going to double down. Liberty minus 9.5 in the first half, minus 118. So, yeah, you better show up.
Big shout out Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce.
Hey, how about Shaheed last night, though?
Hey, guys, nice call on that. Other than that, it was ugly for the
Saints. I took the first touchdown as the Chiefs' defense.
And they got the...
And they caught that pick. And
what an awful pick by Derek Carr.
Yeah, and he just barely nicked him going down. Yeah. And he ran it back to the end.
In front of Archie Manning, they played like that.
I know.
I can't
disgusting.
Believe it.
I'm on 8K. All right, give me Liberty minus 13.5, minus 148. I bought this game down. Go ahead and give me the over in the New Mexico State, Jacksonville State. That over is going off at 58.5, minus 115. It's hard for me to bet unders during the week.
You must be feeling nicey. What has Ace got? He's going to go Mets money line, minus 105, and then our fathers, the Padres, or in this case, the Padre
singular.
Money line. Well, minus 162. All right, let's get to these donuts.
Mets, Phillies, yuck.
Yeah.
Who do you go for? Who do y'all two go for?
God.
In this scenario, because the Phillies won the division, I got to go with the Mets. I like Pete Alonso.
I'm going for controversy. I want somebody to get it stolen from him.
Just want to see the world burn, huh?
Just want to see somebody get just hosed.
All right, if you donated today, guys, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We're going to start a $2 donation from the memes. It says Mickey Mouse Mafia doesn't F around. God help college football.
That's true.
$5 donation from the Bake. It says Vols cannot lose this game.
No.
2 weeks ago, national title hopes lose this one. We go back into the head coach panic spiral. I can't survive that again.
It's a roller coaster of emotions. It always is.
Let's go to DS with the $5 donation. He says, when I said Milton go to hell, I was referring to the hurricane. Yeah, we figured that out.
Yeah.
I always want to let y'all know I'm leaving the state to go to Alabama. Stay safe, brother.
Stay safe. Yeah, if they tell you to evacuate, please leave. Like, just why risk it? I don't understand.
$2 donation from Reese. He says, ashamed alumni coming soon. Degenerate dogs, 30 for 30. We didn't talk about that
Georgia,
today.
The wide receiver getting. We'll throw it rapid fire tomorrow.
$5 donation from Q's. Appreciate it, Q's. Darby Lou really going to make David sleep on the couch after this Vandy Bama breakdown. Was it worth it, though, David?
I'm not going to be sleeping on the couch. I'm more worried about her not making me dinner this week when
that's
to the farm. She controls what I'm eating this week.
I'll sleep where I sleep. But
talking about hiding Laura B's beef jerky, too, when I get home. Like, there's a lot of things
there's
at
certain
stake.
Lines you don't cross.
Yeah, you better get your stuff in order.
$2 donation from the Hawk. What's up, man? He says, if Florida wins, I will need better help.
Yeah, you might.
Big shout out there. Let's go to a $5 donation from Hunter O'Neill. Today's parlay, boys, six legs. Padres plus 1.5 and the over at 7.5. Mets plus 1.5 and the over at 6.5. FIU plus 21.5 and the over 49.5 that's going off at plus 1393, throwing 50 bones on it.
Ooh.
What's your thoughts? Don't hate.
FIU
I don't
plus
hate
what?
That.
21.5?
FIU plus 21.5, correct.
And the over at 49, the baseball ones always worry me. And it's the overs in the baseball game that worry me. But I would rather take an over and live with it than take an under and have the over hit.
Damn right, $5 donation from Ryan. He says, Smack Talk Tuesday, Okie State scored 14 points on Saturday. That's the average IQ of a Cowboys fan. Hashtag Gundy sucks. Hashtag Country Roads. I love it. $2 donation from TG. Says, you guys picking in Liberty U? L-U, sirs.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it. I'll take that as a compliment.
$5 donation from Rick, 21. Says, hey, fellas, pleasure meeting y'all at the tailgate. Question about BYU. You have to pick their first loss. Who's it going to be? Love y'all.
Ooh.
That's Devin.
BYU. I'm going to have to, you're going to have to give me some time to look at that schedule.
Undefeated. Believe. All right, last donation of the day. Actually, two more donations. $5 donation from Serb. Does it mean to startle you guys with being loud? You're good, dude. My serious apologies. Thank you for having me on. I'll keep the volume low time. You're good, Serb. Keep calling in, man. $5 donation from Hank. Appreciate it, Hank. Says, hey, guys, just found the show. Love it. You definitely have my subscriptions. Does Oklahoma have any chance Saturday against the Horns?
I think they got a chance. It's a rivalry game, but like I think they've got to win that game like Arkansas beat Tennessee. I don't think you can get in a back and forth track meet as crazy as, and it'll always be the Red River Shootout to me, but I think, you know, from the quarterback run game to being able to, for Oklahoma to be able to extend those third downs, kind of like Vanderbilt did against Alabama, not saying that this is like the same type matchup, Oklahoma fans, but I think it needs to be a lower scoring, limited possession type game where Oklahoma has a chance in the fourth quarter to win it. I don't think they need to try and win this game 42-39.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say Quinn Ewers and Hawkins are both in a new Dr. Pepper commercial. I wonder if that cancels out like the Dr. Pepper curse.
Probably is smart.
$5 donation from Running Wild Outdoors. He says, will Tennessee start throwing the deep ball again or will Heupel continue to cradle Nico?
Well, I think it's unfair just to say, when you go back and watch the game, Tennessee is running things down the field and Nico is looking down the field. He's just not throwing it down the field. I think it's more on Nico. Now, the second half of the Oklahoma game, yeah, they ran the ball more, right? And that was the smart play. But there are still running combinations that are developing down the field. He's not throwing it. So before we get into Josh Heupel's not calling anything down the field, the quarterback still has to throw it. So before we go out over that ledge, I want to make sure we know that. But
all right, poll. Who wins Saturday, Tennessee or Florida?
They said Tennessee, 81%.
You think it's that much?
Yeah.
Tennessee, 80%. Under. 82%.
Sure. You want to go 80 or 82?
83%.
80 or 82?
Just tell me what I'm right.
Tennessee, 82%.
No way.
18%.
Could smell it. All right. I do want to close the show out today on a more personal note. Yes, Alabama lost a football game to Vanderbilt this past weekend, but they also lost one of their biggest fans. And my mother-in-law, Trudy Rickett, she passed away peacefully in Reed's arms a couple days ago. And, you know, the term mother-in-law is probably the worst way to describe our relationship. She was like a mother to me, whether the law recognizes it or not, I really don't care. You know, I've heard the horror stories about in-laws from many people. And I guess I was just one of the luckiest ones because even though I was from Auburn and I wanted to marry the only child that she had, she was always so incredibly good to me. She was an amazing person who I grew very close to and considered one of my best friends. I knew we would get along in the first couple times that I met her because the first time she was yelling at Alabama on the TV to pick it up and to get their butts in gear. Even though they were up 35 points, that didn't matter to her. Because in the end, it doesn't really matter who we root for, but who we've affected and how we will be remembered. And she accomplished everything that a woman could ask for and a mother and a wife could ask for. And she had a perfect ending to a wonderful life the other day. So I would never say this to her when she was here, but I'll say it now as she watches over us. Roll Tide, Miss Trudy. And I love you so much, and we all miss you already, but I know you're in a better place. Thanks for joining us today, and we're going.